You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We've got a great show for you today. We've got a little bit of something for everybody. We're going to run the gauntlet with Steve Merrill. Joins us every Monday and Friday. We'll talk some NFL football, the Buffalo Bills and the Seattle Seahawks. Throw it down Monday night to football. Steve Merrill breaks it down. We'll talk some NASCAR with Steve Merrill. We'll talk some NBA basketball with Steve Merrill. The Warriors laying 17 tonight against the winless Pelicans basketball team. We'll break that down with Steve Merrill. Meanwhile, Michael Leone, daily roto expert, will step up and join us. We'll break it down from a fantasy standpoint as the Buffalo Bills have lost two straight. They're a streaky team. Feels like Seattle haven't won in forever. It's been 3 weeks for the Seattle Seahawks. So we're going to break down the Monday night football game. I got some basketball picks. I got a ton of NFL props for you. We're going to talk college football with a former national champion from the 1985 Oklahoma Sooners, except this dude still knows college football. You see him on TV every week, now on FS1 and, of course, Fox Sports. Spencer Tillman will join us. We'll talk some college football as the playoff picture. You know, it's still like the eight ball. We got to shake it up a little bit. We saw Texas A&M got shaken up over the weekend. This always happens. You know, we called it on this show. We broke it down with Mark Lawrence. We stated every time one of these teams that doesn't deserve to be there gets there, they lose. And now we're gonna start to get into the time of the year in which teams, they haven't started bitching yet. Wait till teams start bitching. That's one they'll lose. It's inevitable. It's as inevitable as a UFC fighter, Ronda Rousey, talking about, I want to do movies, but I have a fight or two left. You're done and you're going to lose. And as soon as a team starts bitching about the polls, you know, they're toast. So Washington, they didn't complain. They took care of business. And we'll see where the chips fall on Tuesday night. But we'll kick the tires on the college football playoff picture with Spencer Tillman. So as I said, we got a great show, great lineup of guests. Now it's just up to me not to screw it up. We've got some videos as well that you guys submitted courtesy of Sports Guru, who ruined your Sunday. It's pretty cool. Now you guys get to share who ruined your Sunday as it's time for... Who ruined your Sunday? All right, let's start off with the Pittsburgh Steelers. As evidently the Pittsburgh Steelers players, they don't actually understand what, you know, the name Steelers actually means. You know, it's actually for, you know, hard-ass steel workers, iron, strength, you know. And in fact, the actual logo itself is the steel and iron of America's Union Dam logo. If you're ever wondering, how come they have all those colors? Well, that's why. It's actually the damn union. So you know what? These union members in the old days, they used to show up for work every day. They used to get it done, even if they weren't at 100%. Evidently, the Pittsburgh Steelers players, they think that the name Steelers means that they get to steal money from the organization that they play for. As a complete embarrassment. I don't want to buy into any of this this stuff and the excuse that, oh, Big Ben was struggling because he was out. Yeah, Big Ben wasn't out when he struggled and sucked against the Philadelphia Eagles, was he? It was the same crap against the Miami Dolphins on the road before he got hurt. You know, truth be told, the Pittsburgh Steelers just suck on the road. Doesn't matter whether it's Landry Jones, doesn't matter whether it's Big Ben Roethlisberger. But we've got a pattern here. They rolled over and quit against the Philadelphia Eagles earlier in the year. They rolled over and quit against the Miami Dolphins a couple of weeks ago. Now they just tapped out. Don't be fooled. If you see 21-14, that wasn't a real 21-14 football game. The Pittsburgh Steelers were dominated. They were so inept and so useless. As I stated, they're stealing money from the owners of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Through three quarters of play, they managed two first downs. Two first downs. Like, really? Two first downs? You know, I would assume you get two first downs on the first damn drive of the game. Two first downs. They had 69 total yards offense. And the Pittsburgh Steelers' uselessness not only ruined my Sunday, but it's starting to ruin fantasy player Sundays a little bit as well. Let's be real. Antonio Brown hasn't been worth the first overall pick. I hate having the first overall pick. You know, it's kind of spotty. It's not even his fault. You know, you got crappy quarterback play. How's Le'Veon Bell treating you? You know, the big three yesterday, they combined for 40 fantasy points, which combined for 14 real points, which combined with the Pittsburgh Steelers ruining my Sunday. Now we get to the Green Bay Packers. Now, I should know better. Little inside story. Last year in the Las Vegas Super Contest, came down to the final Sunday night game of the year. We were guaranteed. We were locked in. If the Green Bay Packers won the football game, I would have won and split with my teammates $104,000. If they lost to the Minnesota Vikings, which they did, we'd get $55,000. So essentially, the Green Bay Packers screwed me for about $15,000 last year. We'll call it team sports rate, screwing us for $54,000. We would have finished in fourth place if it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers and his sorry ass. Yet yesterday, they screw us again. It doesn't matter. If I take the Packers, they'll lose. If I bet against the Packers, they'll lose, but they'll cover like they did last week against Atlanta. I didn't like the Green Bay Packers yesterday, but I was getting frustrated after the Pittsburgh Steelers screwed me, and I was chasing. I got a little in-game action. I already had the over on the Packer-Colt game, but I'm like, the Colts are down. They're down 14-3. The game's a pick-em right now. They'll come back. No. You know, the quickest thing on the field from Green Bay yesterday was that stupid squirrel that was running around. You know, maybe they should sign that squirrel. He's got moves because Jordy Nelson certainly doesn't anymore. Yeah, I know they put up points. Garbage points against the garbage defense that everybody else in the National Football League carves up. I've said it before, I'm going to say it again, man. Mike McCarthy's a crap-ass coach, all right? He's just a bad coach. Bad decisions. What the hell was he going for two there when he went for two? Why? I'll tell you why. Because he's an idiot. That's why. And it's time and time and time and time again. I've called out Aaron Rodgers a lot in the past. This one wasn't on Aaron Rodgers. Even Aaron Rodgers calling out the teammates right now. As I stated, sign the damn squirrel. And everyone thinks it's all cute. Oh, the squirrel's running around. Yeah, where's that squirrel going? I'd like to know. Where does that little squirrel end up? Well, I'll tell you, I'd like to see him end up on the field for the Packers. Their defense blows. Their coaching staff blows. And they got an annoying quarterback that, you know, normally they get the benefit of the doubt from the National Football League, but even the refs couldn't save their ass yesterday. When you get beaten down by the Colts like that, that's pretty bad. And when you get outcoached by Chuck Pagano, you got a serious-ass problem, and I got a problem because the Green Bay Packers ruined my Sunday. But my Sunday, I'm not going to lie either. I was in a real bad mood by the time the Sunday nighter came around. But I was thinking, you know what? I'm going to get some of this back. I'm going to get some of this back on the Denver Broncos. The Raiders aren't for real. They're 6-2. They barely outscore their opponents. They could as easily be 2-6. Wrong, as the Denver Broncos just absolutely get annihilated as well. The Broncos have been terrible on the road, getting pounded by the last few divisional opponents. C.J. Anderson gets hyped as like, oh, he's overrated. C.J. Anderson is like the key to that football team. Booker ain't ready to carry the load. Simeon can't carry the load. And the defense that made plays last year, well, they're not making so many plays. But what's amazing to me about the Broncos is they're 6-3 right now. That's pretty good. They're 6-3 straight up, and they're 6-3 against the spread. And I swear, all three freaking times they've lost, they've ruined my Sunday. Who ruined yours? Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we got a great show. Michael Leone, one of the smartest roto guys, going to step up and in and join us. Mike's a Buffalo Bill fan, as am I, except I do not like the Buffalo Bills tonight. And in fact, I'm in a survivor pool that started out with 50 people. Well, it's down to two. It was down to four before yesterday, but two of them had the Green Bay Packers. Fortunately, I was not one of them. One other dude had the Kansas City Chiefs over the Jacksonville Jags. Meanwhile, I've got the Seattle Seahawks tonight against the Buffalo Bills. I'm going against my Buffalo Bills tonight. $5,000 at stake. And if the Bills lose tonight and Seattle wins, then we move forward. Then there's just me and Matt Kipper left standing. All right, so we got a ton of stuff to get to. Spencer Tillman, I'm looking forward to Spencer Tillman joining us on the show. Michael Leone's going to join us. Steve Merrill will join me in a minute. You know, we started playing these videos courtesy of Sports Guru. You know, who ruined your Sunday? Well, you can complain. You got a sports take, you can share it with us. You think I suck, you can share it with us. Except trollers generally hide their face. And you have to show your face, all right? There's no, like, David Duke, like, mass stuff, all right? No KKK allowed. You got to show your face if you're going to send a video. No hoods. You know, Halloween will give you the benefit of the doubt, but Halloween's gone. Right now, so we've actually got a bunch of submissions actually, and I want to encourage people to actually send videos in. So we're gonna play them. So let's get one. We got one from New York, Smitty, who thinks Ryan Fitzpatrick sucks. Let's see what Smitty has to say, courtesy of Sports Guru.
NY Smitty here. Who ruined my NFL Sunday? Once again, it's Ryan Fitzpatrick, like he does every single weekend. It is the most frustrating New York Jets seasons that I ever had to watch in my entire life. And for some reason, this organization keeps giving him chance after chance, excuse after excuse. Everyone's blaming the offensive line, the defense, the wide receivers. I mean, everything but blaming the man that's at the helm, the one that closes up the running lanes because they stack the box because they aren't scared of Ryan Fitzpatrick's arm. The same wide receivers that are wide open for touchdowns that are getting missed. It's not the offensive line. You go ahead and look at the tape. He has plenty of time to step up in the pocket on a lot of throws. But of course, when you're playing against old pros like Wake and Sue, they're going to get theirs. But when you have wide open guys, you got to make those throws, fella, if you want to be a starting quarterback. And then he gets mad at the organization for making a switch a couple games ago when he leads the league in interceptions. He's at the bottom of the league in red zone efficiency. The guy needs to go. He's ruining not only mine, but everyone's Sunday as a Jets fan.
Well said, Smitty. Well said. You know what? I was going to bring up the Jets on Who Ruined My Sunday, but it's almost like a weekly thing. Somehow Ryan Fitzpatrick finds a way to screw me. I'm not going to blame the loss yesterday on Fitzpatrick, though. You know, the defense had to make stops. They couldn't stop Ajayi late in the football game. Hell, they couldn't stop Tannehill. Something's happening in Miami right now. I'm going to lay some blame on Todd Bowles, man. Somebody that we all heralded as a great coach. Dude seems to be pretty clueless right now this year. Just sort of always seems to be confused. And you're right, the Jets, it's frustrating because they're not a terrible football team, but they just don't know how to win games. And one thing that frustrated me yesterday, you see Fitzpatrick, dude's already got a first down. He actually pulls a college-like lateral, like an option play. You know, nearly turns the ball over. And then after when they're talking, they put it up with the graphics about his intangibles, and they say he's smart. And it's like, well, that wasn't very smart what he just did. And then, but under the intangibles, it says smart. And then like, well, he went to Harvard. And then right underneath smart, it says overly aggressive, forces things. Well, that's not very smart then, is it? Like, enough with the smart stuff, all right? Hillary Clinton's got an IQ of 146. You know, the witch deleted 35,000 emails. Was that smart? You know? All right, we got more videos after. Let's bring in Steve Merrill right now. I'm getting upset. What's up, Steve?
It was very smart because she's going to be the next president of the United States because she deleted those emails.
Yeah, I think that's what Warman just whispered in my ear when he said it was smart.
Of course it was.
I guess it was. I like what Sean Hannity said last night. He tweeted out, and I don't often say that I like what Sean Hannity said, Steve, but... Well, I like what Sean Hannity tweeted last night. He said, hey, everybody, if you're under investigation from the FBI, just bleach bit the evidence. It's okay now. As evidently, that's the case, Steve.
That's no question. I mean, you just kind of ignore the problem and it'll go away.
Okay. We're going to get to that in a minute. I want to open up with this. Yeah, you seem to be as pleased as I thought you'd be about this turning of events.
It's like Christmas tomorrow. We all get a break afterwards. It's a good thing no matter what happens. It's over.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, for now. Although, we'll get into that in a minute. It might not be over, actually.
All right, so week 9 of the NFL, not quite over yet. Favorites were 9-3 straight up, 6-4 with two pushes against the spread. The total, 7-5 to the over. We got one more football game, Bills and Seahawks. Looks like, you know, it was 7 this morning, and right as I was starting the show, Steve, I saw some 6.5s pretty much across the board with the total sitting at 44 tonight. What's your take on this game?
You know, the line is dropping. I see some six out there even now, so I don't think we're going to get many sevens by kickoff unless there's a lot of late money on Seattle. And you know, I'm not sure the Sharps necessarily want anything to do with Seattle in this game. The public probably has been burnt by them enough recently as well. It's just they're struggling offensively. Something's just not right with Russell Wilson. He doesn't appear to be healthy this season, and the offense has been weak. They're averaging just over 18.5 points a game. Buffalo scoring 26.5 a game. Bills actually have a substantial offensive edge tonight. Of course, defensively, the Seahawks have a substantial edge, so it's really offense versus defense. Strong home field Monday night with that defense, you would expect that might be the difference. But as we saw last night on Sunday, the better offensive team in Oakland beat the better defensive team in Denver.
Yeah, but let's be real about the Bills' offense. Yes, it does technically put up 26.5 points a game. A lot of it's in garbage time, Steve. A lot of it. I like to rack up and see how many touchdowns the Bills scored when down double digits. You know, they're often down, and then they often put some points up. So it's, yeah, they score, but I think it's kind of a it's a suspect stat, I believe, Steve, the Buffalo Bills scoring margin. I mean, let's put it into context. All right, they are the second-best rushing team in the National Football League. They're running for $151 a game, which is very, very good. Those are like college numbers. You know, LeSean McCoy expected to play tonight. He's putting up over 5 yards per rush on the season. But that Buffalo Bills passing attack, Steve, clearly offensive, man. You know, 32nd in the National Football League, like 179 yards a game. It's subpar.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. In garbage time, you're not usually putting up big rushing numbers. You know, so there's two ways to look at that. You're usually throwing the ball more, and they have still won 4 of their last 6 games. And if you take out the New England game, they've scored 25 or more in each of their other 6 games. And the New England game was a 16-0 win, so they were never playing from behind there. You know, since they made the change at offensive coordinator a few weeks into the season, I do think the offense has been better overall. Yep. And there's no question Seattle's struggling. We all saw that Sunday night game a few weeks ago against Arizona, which set football back several decades. And, you know, I just don't think they fixed their problems. You know, Russell Wilson, I think, has gone like 3 straight games now without like a TD pass or something. I mean, his number, he's really not been the same, and he's not running the ball at all either. And that's something else that's really hurting that Seahawk offense.
You know, I look at Seattle, and you're right. They are struggling. And Pete Carroll, a very, very positive guy. We all know that. But even Pete Carroll, you know, went at them a little bit in practice this week and even publicly stated, I told them they need to play better, that this isn't Seahawk football, that I expect more. And, you know, the free pass is over right now at this juncture of the season. Injuries on defense hurting them a little bit. But as you mentioned, that offense, they're not protecting the quarterback. They can't run the football. They have had issues. 2 weeks ago, they had that 6-6 tie. Last week, you know, they lose at New Orleans, except I think the Saints are better than people realize. I seem to be in a minority here, Steve. It's amazing. There's a lot of Seahawks fans that watch the show. I have a lot of Seahawks fans on Twitter. And they're all worried about tonight's game. And they all love the Bills plus the points. And I'm telling them, hey, don't worry. Seattle wins this by 13. but I totally get it. No, yeah, it's hard to want to lay the points with the Seahawks team the way they're playing on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the real question is, can Buffalo do enough defensively? They're a below-average defensive team this season overall with their numbers, but they've been Jekyll and Hyde, as you know. I mean, some games, you know, they shut out the Patriots. Even without Brady, that was still impressive on the road. They held the Rams and Niners to 16-19. Those are two weak offensive teams for the most part. Miami and New England, the last two games, have put up more points. But against weaker offensive teams, Baltimore, they held to 13. You know, if you look at those games they've played this year, I think Seattle really does qualify as a below-average offensive team right now. You know, so that's the case. Maybe a little bit of a look at the under 43. I just don't feel like the Seahawks are going to all of a sudden fix those offensive problems. Putting up only 20 points against New Orleans is not impressive, especially after what we saw last night or yesterday afternoon. My top overplay was the 49ers-Saint game over. It was over by the start of the fourth quarter. You know, so only scoring 20 at New Orleans last week doesn't make me think they fixed their problems all of a sudden after that touchdown-less game against Arizona 2 weeks ago.
What do you think of the total at 44, Steve? It's amazing. The last 8 times they've played, it's gone over the number, except, I don't know, does that mean anything that it went over the number in 1997 when they played? They don't play often, so.
No.
actually, one of the times they did play, Steve, was the infamous game that I got detained for relieving myself at Ralph Wilson Stadium in the parking lot / against the fence. I actually, I got arrested. I ended up in the tank there, in the drunk tank at the Buffalo Bills. That's the last time they played Seattle and Buffalo. When I saw Seattle-Buffalo, I was like, oh, yeah, I saw like the history. I was like, yeah, I was at that game. Or at least I was at the first half, Steve. I got
it's like when Homer Simpson got arrested at the Super Bowl. It was in the detention for the fake. They had the fake tickets.
I got nailed at the half. I was there for the first half. And I went to the bathroom, but it was huge, Steve. The stadium's a dump, man. They have like two bathrooms for the entire stadium, it seems. There was just, I wasn't going to make it, man. You know, there was just, the lineup was too long. I wasn't going to make it. So I went, like, they had this, like, fence, and there was, like, these trees. There was no one there, man. I went over there, and it was like a urination sting, Steve. Like, I turned around, I zipped up. It was like the episode of Seinfeld, man. Security was, like, waiting for me. They grabbed me. And then I thought, well, I'm going to get kicked out. You know, and I was sort of, like, right near the entrance. So I was like, ah, buddy's probably just going to push me into the parking lot. Except, no, man, the guy handcuffed me. That's when I knew I was in, it wasn't a good day.
Yeah, that sounds like a racket to me. They put fewer bathrooms so they can get some fines out of people for urinating elsewhere.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Steve. You know what? They got like 48 people in that operation that day.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And basically, you're exactly right. Everyone at court that day, I went on the same day as everybody did. Orchard County, man, they just, that's their money, Steve. Like, they love it. Let's just nail people for drinking in public and whatever. And it racks up, man. They make a lot of money off that stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sad they do that. And like you said, I mean, nobody on the teams then are playing now. So obviously, you know, the recent history, you really don't have much to go on here. I think the big factor here, too, could be Buffalo traveling. I mean, this isn't a great setup for the Bills. They had that huge New England game last week. They travel now across country to Seattle. They got Cincinnati on a short week. Or actually, they have a bye, I believe, and then Cincinnati. So, you know, you just wonder if Buffalo shows up fully in this game or if they kind of look ahead to that bye week coming up.
All right, Pelicans and Warriors. Pelicans, man, money burner, Steve. They're 0-6 straight up. Davis just keeps putting up crazy numbers, but it's never enough. You figure with the numbers, you got a guy that's putting up 45 and 50 a night, basically, that you can at least get a damn cover. But no, they're 1-5 against the number. Warriors now 4-2 straight up, 2-4 against the number. Is 17 too high tonight? What do you make of this one?
Yeah, I was going to say Golden State's been a bit of a money burner as well. In fact, I had a best bet on the Lakers Friday night for my clients. What a great setup. That is a textbook example of just how you handicap the NBA early on. It's all situational analysis.
I took the Lakers on the money line, Steve.
Yeah, I know, and that wasn't a bad play. I mean, they dominated that game from start to finish. They were plus 600 on the money line as an 11-point dog. And they led from start to finish outright.
I'm not going to lie, Steve. I got him at plus 180 when they were up by like 15 or something.
Oh, in
like
game.
That.
Okay, I was going to say.
They were up plus by 11. 15 at plus 180. I was like, all right, I got to take this. Like,
yeah, that was halftime. Yeah, the halftime line, they were up, I think it was 15 because the halftime line was 13.5. So they were actually a 1.5-point game favorite at the half even. What did Golden State have left to prove? Durant had beaten Oklahoma City the night before. They traveled without rest against an improved Lakers squad. So Golden State is an overvalued commodity right now, and a lot of people feel they're actually a weaker defensive team now with the new lineup. But guess what? The only game New Orleans has covered this year was against Golden State, and the Warriors are coming off that opening loss to the Spurs, a 29-point loss. A lot of people like Golden State. It went from like 10.5 to 12.5, and they won by 8. So, yeah, it's a tough call. I mean, New Orleans has covered no games this season except the one game against Golden State.
All right, Steve, we only got a couple of minutes. So quickly on this, because I want to get to the election. But the Pistons and the Clippers, you're speaking of money burning. You're burning money if you're betting the over with these teams. Both the two best defensive teams in the NBA. Clippers are just locking it down, man. Clippers are locking it down. 5 straight games have held their opponents to under 100. Pistons only giving up 93 a game. Total's buck 97 tonight. I like the Pistons plus the 8.5 here.
Yeah, I think in a low-scoring game with two good defensive teams, I agree. Detroit should be a solid dog here. They're 4-2 against the number. LA Clippers 5-1 straight up in the ATS. They've both been very strong against the spread. That would get me leaning towards the dog.
All right, and finally, in closing, the election. Steve, I wrote it out. I was waiting, and I got caught up in the moment, man. I got caught up in the hype. On Friday with the excitement of a pending indictment. There were a lot of reports that the indictment was coming. WikiLeaks was tweeting that the end was coming. There was some allegations of a video out there that were really, really over the top. And I was buying in that the video was going to be released. It never was. The FBI says the investigation's off now in a very bizarre late 11th hour switch. And now the odds are skyrocketing. Hillary's like a minus 500 favorite. It seems inevitable.
Well, right now, if you look at the state-by-state odds, she has over a 100 electoral lead. She's at 323 to 215. Florida is now back in her corner. We talked about how last week it went to Trump after the allegations came out. She got down to 72% of the market. She's now at 82%. Trump is down to 18% chance of winning. Stock market down 8 or 9 days in a row the last couple weeks. It's up over 2% today on Monday, a substantial gap higher on the open Monday. And the markets won Hillary. The markets do not want Trump. So we'll see what happens. But keep in mind, Brexit, 16% chance of happening this summer. The stock market's gapped on that and then just crashed down when the opposite happened. Trump's not out of it, but it doesn't look likely.
Yeah, that's all you need to know. Of course, the market's up because all of her cronies are celebrating right now, right?
One thing, Gabe, 83% of the time when it's been down the previous 2 months since World War II, the incumbent party loses. So that would actually favor Trump, but not a huge sample there.
All right. Well, how about this, Steve, with your Washington Redskins? The last 19 presidential elections, if the Redskins win the last home game before the election, the incumbent party wins. And this has been correct. 17 out of the last 19 elections, which is just unbelievable to me that this has been so accurate, going all the way back to 1936, Steve. And for the record, if you're wondering about that Bengals, that Redskins game,
they were the road team.
Yeah, well, what's that mean? It goes to the Supreme Court like the year 2000?
but here's
that wasn't a home game. The Redskins beat the Eagles in their last home game, which means the Democrats win.
Right, but if they play in London the week before, it's 0-0 so far. So we'll have to see how that affects the election this week. I mean, yeah, I think it's very fitting that it was a tie. It's too bad that didn't count as their home game, because some people are saying Trump could win the popular vote and lose the electoral vote, which would basically be a tie in my book and cause even more havoc. So it's most likely over after tomorrow, but not necessarily.
You know what? a lot of things are over after tomorrow, Steve. You know, I don't think I'll be able to watch tomorrow night. I'll be turning. I'll be watching some games instead of that inauguration deal. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right. Well, we got to take a quick break. We're going to get to more of your videos. We're going to talk college football with Spencer Tillman coming up next. Game Time Decisions live on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenzi. Let's talk some football with a man that knows football, a national champion at the collegiate level, a Super Bowl champion, longtime NFL vet, and a man who does a great job right now in FS1. And you can tell he's real happy to be reunited with Mr. Tim Brando. They're doing great work. I'm excited to welcome Spencer Tillman to Game Time Decisions. Spencer, it's been a while since we've had you on the show. It's great to catch up. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us, man.
Good to be here, Gabe. Thanks a lot for having me, buddy.
Well, you know what, Spencer? Let's jump right in right now. The stakes are getting higher with each passing week in the college football world. And there's one correlation, Spencer, that I noticed between the top four teams in the country in Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Washington. And I don't know if I can call Clemson a smash-mouth team, but they play a high level of defense. And so they play smash-mouth on the defensive style of the field. But you look at the teams, man, Michigan, Alabama, Washington, all programs are just laying the hammer down, you know, running the football, big, old-school, beefy offensive linemen, and let's just play smash-mouth defense when the other team has the ball. It's almost nice to see a throwback this year, isn't it, Spencer?
Yeah, it's a nice change-up. Again, I think what you've tapped on, too, that most people have missed out on is the old drive for show, putt for dough. You know, that's the kind of deal we're dealing with on the college ranks in football. You know, the spread offenses that have proliferated the league and all leagues, all major five for sure, they are what they are. But when you matriculate up to the top, it's going to be whether or not you can play defense and whether you can run the football. So you may drive for show to get there, but when it's all said and done, it's going to be whether or not you can run it and you can stop people from doing the same.
Spencer, there's been a lot of talk about the quality of play, or at least let's say not the quality of play or the excitement level in the National Football League this year. Thank God for college football because it's been off the hook every Saturday. Yet you get some NFL games that are extremely low scoring, but not because there's great defense, it's just because there's poor execution and it's bad football. LSU Alabama, another old school football game that was low scoring, but I was on the edge of my seat, man. It was like a World Cup soccer game. Who's going to score first? Like, it was just so tense, wasn't it?
It really was. And it's a bit of a throwback, but again, it's very rare that you can get a game that's small ball in its orientation that can live up to that type of capacity to have you on tiptoes of anticipation waiting to see what's going to happen next. I think you credit the personalities. You don't have a bigger one than Nick Saban. And obviously in Ed Orgeron, you've got someone who is a personality in and of himself. I mean, the guy, if you can understand him half the time, he's one of the most compelling, polarizing, great recruiter in the game today. So he deserved to be the head coach of LSU. When you combine all of that, the historic aspects of how each year these two teams are going to churn out at least between 5 and 7 NFL players. And this year, Alabama has about 7 on their defense alone. LSU has about 5 that will be playing on Sundays as well. You cannot miss in terms of entertainment value. So they served it up. It didn't bring up a lot of points. You know, the 10 spot is sufficient enough for us purists out there to qualify for a good afternoon of football.
Texas A&M were under the microscope after being put into the top 4 of the initial polls. Yet, you know, I think we all need to chill out. There's a lot of stuff that can happen along the way. And I've always respected you, Spencer. You've always, you know, had some eyebrows raised with your colleagues. You're not scared to think outside the box when it comes to the playoff picture. And people tend to sort of get locked in, almost like the NFL. Oh, Dallas and New England in the Super Bowl for sure. A lot of football left to be played professionally and collegiately as well. Who's a program right now that we aren't talking about as much as we should be that you still think has a shot to make some big noise in the national championship picture?
Well, I think all the teams that are there right now are there. I still believe that a multi-loss SEC team, now that would have been at LSU if they were able to pull up the upset over Alabama. Don't think for a moment that had they defeated Alabama and then ran the table from there, if they had any offense whatsoever, that was a possibility, because Alabama, as good as they are, they're not invincible. They do have a couple of chinks in their armor. It's just that no one is equipped to exploit that in the SEC West. But if LSU were to be able to do that and ran the table, you would be looking at a multi-loss team, and then the prospect of Alabama not having won their own division within their own conference, not competing for a conference championship, a double, you know, dipper there. So that possibility existed. Now, we won't have to sit here and lament that there will be no gnashing of teeth, because that didn't happen. But Auburn is another team you got to look at down the stretch. The Iron Bowl is going to be significant. If there is a team that I would be looking at, I would be looking at Auburn. I know they've got losses early in the season, but right now, you know, they got the quarterback issues going on, but they're playing good enough defense to be disruptive down the stretch.
You know, you're making me feel good, Spence, because that's the team that I had circled. I said, I got it right here in my script. I'm looking at Auburn. Auburn in control of their own destiny right now. And it would be hard to deny if they ran the table from here on out. They beat Alabama. They go on. They win the SEC championship game. That's a two-loss team. But, hey, as a betting man, there's no way I'd bet that even a two-loss SEC team isn't getting into the Final Four. What about my Michigan Wolverines? If they lose, Spencer, are they done? Because they always say, if you're going to lose, man, you better lose early. And if Michigan's going to lose, I think it's going to happen real late. If it does happen, will they be on the outside looking in if they lose to Ohio State?
No, they're blue blood, and they're driven by a coach with a high personality. I don't think that'll happen. I mean, it seems like it's similar, but remember now, tradition is the currency of our game. And if you've got a star, superstar coach, you've got an iconic, historic program like Michigan, you're not going to lose a lot of ground. That's the reason why it's so important to understand where the value is placed in our game. That's the reason why in 2012 you had an undefeated Ohio State team that leapfrogged both Baylor and TCU on that final weekend of the college football season. People thought that was just tragic. No, it's not. Had it been Oklahoma or Texas and when they were good, then that would have never happened. But Baylor and TCU are not Oklahoma or Texas. From a historical standpoint, each of those teams could play with Texas right now any single day of the week. And that's the real shame of the Big 12 Conference. You got these mid-level, I'm going to call them mid-level, no disrespect, but these are teams that when I played the game at Oklahoma, that we would run roughshod over, TCU and Baylor. They were little stepchildren to us. But now everything has changed. The landscape of college football insofar as it relates to the Big 12 conference and what has happened with the SEC has changed. Now, if you're at A&M and you've got a chance to play at A&M, you're picking A&M over Oklahoma in many instances because you're playing in the SEC now. TCU, when Gary's got his full complementary defense working and that tandem that he has as offensive coordinator, Meacham and Cumbie, every sexy pick out there, every young kid wants to go to that place and play. I know they're struggling right now. Before their debacle off the field, Art Briles had it really going on at Baylor. Now, but for those situations, we haven't even mentioned Oklahoma and Texas. They're sucking hind tit now in this whole equation. So the landscape has changed, man, and so we have to understand that. And then when we come to the table to discuss this, we can't do it through historical filters. We've got to say this is where we are right now. And based on what it is, these are the teams that I think can matriculate. And I think for the most part, the committee did a good job of that. Everybody was like, well, how could you have A&M up there in that four spot? They did because A&M had already played Alabama. Whether they lost or not is irrelevant. If it was close and they had played them, they're going to get a bump from the strength and the cachet that comes with having played Alabama. Alternately, if you're a team like a Baylor or someone that hadn't played anyone, you're sniffing, trying to find a spot and become relevant. But now that you've lost now, you know, the Texas beat you, you're in trouble. So it's really an interesting place to be right now in the landscape of college football. But it's fun. I think it's the purest form of football out there.
Spencer, we've got about 1 minute left, so we'll close up on this, in which, yeah, we have a playoff right now, and for the life of me, I don't know why the Big 12 didn't expand and make a conference championship game. I think they almost bring on a lot of the torment onto themselves in this, but, you know, wouldn't it just make the most sense? Let's just put all five power conference championship winners in a similar NCAA basketball style, and then have the wild card, you know, be it from the American Athletic, maybe a team from the Mountain West, et cetera. Because we're right back to where we started. I get that it's always been part of the allure of college football, the debate, and we all grew up in that era, Spencer, the debate, and that's, you know, been the charm of it. But in today's day and age, I don't know if it's charming. I just sort of find it annoying. Let's just put the conference winners head-to-head and get it on.
That would be a great thing, and here's why it won't never happen. You would either have to back off the number of regular season games, and they won't ever want to lose that payday, and that won't happen. So I think that the hypocrisy that is there, that is college football sometimes in this regard, from the academician standpoint, the ones who calls the shot and makes the rules, they'll never do that. It's just this whole specter of concussions. Because, look, you start counting up the number of plays, if you start adding more games, they won't be able to defend that. It's an untenable position for them. So I don't see it happening in the near future. If it does, it's going to be in the context of an altered space as it relates to college football, one that is more reminiscent to what we're seeing, not identical to the NFL, but where they're acknowledging that these players are more than just student, quote-unquote, athletes. They're definitely more than that.
Yeah, when I see Hawaii fly 40,000 miles before they play their first home game, Spence, I wonder. Yeah, I wonder what the motives are when it's all
Absolutely.
Said and done, man. Hey, we got to get out of here. But always loved your passion, man. Grew up watching you both play and on television. It's always a pleasure, my man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Gabe. Thanks for having me.
There's Spencer Tillman with us. We'll take a quick break. We talk some fantasy football breakdown tonight's Monday Nighter with Michael Leone. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, let's bring in Daily Roto's Michael Leone, who, like me, is a lifelong Buffalo Bill fan. A lot of stuff to get to. And I don't know, Mike, I'm almost ashamed to tell you this because I know you love the Bills. And I've watched every Bills game since like 1977, 78 type of deal. But the Seattle Seahawks are my survivor pick. And there's no turning back, man. This thing's locked in. There's no other games. The deadline's gone, and there's only one other dude left. So somebody, if Buffalo wins tonight, the dude wins $5,000. Seattle wins, then it's me head-to-head, and I move on. I hate going against Buffalo, man, but I just don't see them winning tonight, Mike.
This field, as a fan, this is the game that they win, though, to suck you back in. And then you're looking at all these home games in December and going, oh, my God, they could do it this year. And then they blow one of the easy games. That's how they do it. But it's a tough task, especially with all the injuries on offense. LeSean McCoy is going to play tonight. I do like him for DFS this week, and I think they wouldn't be playing him unless they think he's healthy. After they had that issue with Miami, he wasn't healthy. It cost them basically 2 weeks of production by just not resting him that 1 week. So I'm hoping they got some common sense. They're only using him with a long week, some extra rest if he's truly healthy. But still, it's tough without Sammy Watkins. I mean, it was only a matter of time before that bit them. They just have nothing at the wide receiver position to help Tyrod Taylor out.
That's on Doug Whaley for not drafting a wide receiver or being aggressive and bringing in the wide receivers. Yeah, let's not turn it into rip Doug Whaley time, because we only have a couple of minutes and there's not enough time. But he's living on borrowed time as general manager of the Buffalo Bills, most likely. So it's they're very similar teams. It's a battle of strengths versus strengths here, though. Bills rushing for 151 a game. Seahawks only give up 89 yards a game. I'm of the belief, and especially now with the injuries to Chancellor and to Bennett, if you want to beat, they're still hard to run on. If you want to beat Seattle, you need to have a precise quarterback with wide receivers that can make plays on their DBs. And I just don't see Buffalo having that. It just seems to be a bad stylistic matchup for them, in my opinion.
No, as you were describing, they need a precise quarterback with wide receiver group. I was like, well, no, not Buffalo. They don't check the boxes there. But the run game is really interesting. You said that strength on strength. Seattle is one of the best run defenses in the league. The Bills, in terms of Football Outsiders, DVOA, offensively, they're actually third in rush rank as a team in offensive efficiency. So if they can run the ball, I think they can make this closer than some people think. Russell Wilson's been really bad the last few weeks. I don't think he's thrown a touchdown in three consecutive weeks. I don't know if the ankle is still bothering him or what, or something's not right there. And I think the Bills can take advantage of their offensive line. So if they're able to run the ball, I do think, and maybe it's my homerism shining through, but I've actually been pretty pessimistic most of the year. I do think that this game is going to be closer than people think.
Russell Wilson, probably the second quarterback off the board in most season-long leagues, or at least right there, or let's say third with Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton, et cetera. A fantasy bust. He's only topped 20 points once this year. They've struggled. Their offense has sputtered along the way. Yet let's look, if you look at the DK Monday-Thursday contest, the options are kind of thin here. Like, is Joe Flacco actually the best quarterback out of the four for fantasy purposes for the Monday-Thursday matchup?
It's funny because I think Russell Wilson might be the highest owned of the four quarterbacks, which is really saying something when he hasn't put up, I don't think, more than 12 DraftKings points three consecutive weeks. He's only averaging around 14 on the season. So I think Flacco is actually the safest. That Cleveland defense is just horrific. They're 30th in Football Outsiders DVOA. And Flacco is probably your safest bet. I would go with, if you were playing a cash game, you would use Flacco or Russell Wilson probably, but you should not be playing cash games on this short slate. I think you should play some tournaments. I actually like going with a Brown stack. If you want to be off the board, you know, the ownership's going to flock to the same guys because there's just not that many options. There's not a lot of high-priced options. So taking advantage of the Baltimore, the skill receivers and Terrell Pryor and Corey Coleman, for Cleveland, I actually like that against Baltimore team that's given up a lot of fantasy points to wide receivers.
What do you think of Doug Baldwin this evening? I think Baldwin actually is going to have a decent game tonight, but I don't think he's worth $6,200 from a DFS standpoint. The actual Vegas prop for over under catches for him is 4.5, and I think he can get there. But Baldwin, $6,200, is he on your radar?
Not too much, because I like pivoting to those Cleveland wide receivers, and I think the tight ends on this short slate, you could use both of them using the flex, because you know the tight ends against Cleveland, it's been absurd. We saw Jason Witten yesterday go absolutely ham. They've given up, I think, three times this year in 9 weeks. They've given up the highest tight end score of the week. That's pretty crazy when you really think about it. Like one out of 32 teams have given up the highest. So Dennis Pitta and Jimmy Graham, I would rather use Jimmy Graham than Doug Baldwin. We saw last week you got Rob Gronkowski matched up against Nickell Robey for the Bills, their slot cornerback. He's a small guy. I mean, he's a pretty good slot corner, but you get him matched up against these athletic tight ends, he just doesn't have the size to compete with them. So if they get Graham matched up against him, even, you know, two or three times, that could be two or three big plays. That's exactly what happened with the Bills against Gronkowski last week. So that's the matchup I'm more worried about as a Bills fan, and as a fantasy player, I'm more looking to take advantage of.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. I think the tight ends could have some success, and it's amazing, actually. You look at, like, you know, what the appearance of really good defenses. Look at Ebron yesterday. Ebron, great game. And, you know, Zach Miller the week before that against that Minnesota Viking defense. These solid defense in Seattle can be vulnerable over the middle of the field as well. There's always been space over the middle of the field when throwing against the Seattle Seahawks defense.
Yeah, I'm still, even with that in mind, I have no faith in the Bills passing game. If they're going to be successful, I think it's going to be on the ground, the short pass. I think people might overlook McCoy because he's banged up, and, you know, when you're breaking down matchups, you're not looking to take a running back against Seattle. But if you look at the running backs in this slate, you know, Christy Michael's losing a little bit of playing time to CJ Procise. Baltimore seems like they have the best matchup, but Kenneth Dixon had 9 carries last game. Terrence West didn't have a whole bunch. So that situation's clouded a little bit. Not really invested in the running backs for Cleveland. So when you just start looking at talent and teams and the guys that you know are going to get the touches, I still think McCoy is viable, even though the matchup's horrible. And I would rather do that. I've been burned by Charles Clay a few times this year, thinking that if someone's going to be successful in the Bills passing game, it's got to be Charles Clay over the middle. They have nobody else, and it just hasn't materialized week to week.
Yeah, Percy Harvin, not on the DraftKings board, actually, this evening. All right, Sam, we got to get out of here already. Time just flew by on this show. Hey, Mike, thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. Check Mike out, Daily Roto, for all your expert advice. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Mike Leone with us, dailyroto.com. I want to get to DeBreezy's video. Do we have time? Damn. All right. I promise we're going to get to the videos we didn't get to tomorrow. We're going to do it for sure, for sure. All right. We're going to come back with our plays of the day next. It's not often that I bet against my Buffalo Bills. And you know what? The last couple of times I've done it, it didn't end well. And there's nothing more frustrating than watching your lifelong favorite team kick some serious ass. Well, you're losing money on the game. But you know what? I've been a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan, so I'm smart enough to know they're not winning in Seattle tonight, all right? Lay the 6. We'll tease this game to the over as well. I don't know what it means the last 8 times these two teams have played. It's gone over the number, but it should do enough to get to 36-37. Russell Wilson, over under 21.5 completions. He's completed more than 21.5 passes in 6 of 7 games this year. His numbers are bad, but he completes a lot of passes. I don't think he's going to throw an interception tonight. That's plus 115. Doug Baldwin, over under 4.5 catches. Let's go over. Christian Michael. You know, they're going to pound the rock tonight. I like Michael to go over 63.5. Long field goal is only 42.5, so we'll go a small play on that to the over. Give me the Detroit Pistons plus the 8.5 and the over in the Warrior-Pelican game. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.